Welcome to the Content Marketing Brief.
Hello and welcome to the Content Marketing Brief, a weekly recap of all that is timely and relevant in the world of content marketing. My name is Dave Zwickerhill and I'm here with my co-host Trent Gay of Maine Digital Press.
Hey Dave.
How's it going, Trent?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm excellent.
Good.
I've had a pretty action-packed week. I've finally come around to using Snapchat after being prompted by a 60-year-old, which I found to be amusing.
That's exciting. I have never used Snapchat. I thought Snapchat was just for tweens to sext each other. I didn't know that adults could actually use Snapchat.
And that was exactly my reaction when we were talking about different social media outlets to promote stuff, and this person said, "Well, you know, what about Snapchat?" And you know, I was like, "Isn't that just for sexting teenagers? Isn't that what that's for?"
My understanding, yeah.
And she was like, "Oh, maybe it is." But, you know, I figured, you know, I had to do my due diligence. And, you know, so I put the app on the iPhone and started playing around with it. And it's actually pretty cool. And there's actually some brands on there that are doing some interesting stuff.
I'm on it tonight.
Yeah.
I'm getting on it tonight.
So, yeah, there's...
Why not? What do I have to lose?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you know, kill a couple hours.
Can't hurt. Yeah.
But so the one interesting aspect of it that I didn't realize that you could do is that there's a functionality called Stories or My Stories. And what you can do is you can take a Snapchat and instead of sending it directly to one of your friends, you just add it to your story. And you take a picture and add a caption, or you take video, you can add a caption to video as well. And then you add it to your story, and then that your story is basically can be, you can change it in the settings, it can be shared with everyone or it can be shared with just your friends.
Huh.
And people can access snaps in your story for 24 hours after they've been published.
I see.
So as long as you're continually adding Snapchats to your story, it's just a rolling thing.
Right.
Because as one gets to be 24 hours old, it falls off. But as you continually add, you can keep watching the ones that are, you know, 23 hours old or 12
right.
hours old and keep adding new ones.
Okay.
And there's actually some brands that are using it. Taco Bell being one of the main ones. I don't know if you follow them on Instagram or on Facebook.
You know what? I don't.
I'm not ashamed to say I did a short stint in high school, you know, manning the cash register at Taco Bell.
Oh, wow. You worked there?
I did. Oh. I did. When I went to high school in Colorado, I worked at Taco Bell. And honestly, it was an all right job.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah. I really didn't mind it. And, but their social media people are on it. Like,
yeah.
their stuff that they share on Instagram is always just, creative and cool visually and also just, like, kind of funny.
Right, they know that, they know it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
One of those. I like those.
Completely self-aware.
You know what, Denny's is like, I've considered following Denny's on Twitter.
Really?
The same kind of, yeah, they're funny. Like, they know they're ridiculous and they're not afraid to just be irreverent and funny,
That's cool. I'll definitely have to check that out. See, for me, it's just because I'm such a visually oriented person. Like, I like it when there's almost, like, a picture on Instagram and then, like, a caption to kind
right.
of, like, help it along.
Right.
Where if it's just text, like, on Twitter,
right.
I'm not
sure.
always... I don't... It's definitely not as engaging for me.
A lot of people prefer the Instagram and the visual formats.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the text.
Yeah, so Snapchat... It's pretty interesting because there's no history of it. I mean, once it's 24 hours old,
right.
it just goes away.
That's pretty unique.
Yeah, and I hear that there's Taco Bell is the only one that I am really familiar with. I know that there's a couple other brands doing it. I know that actually Suicide Girls has a Snapchat account.
Hey, I'm in. I'm on this thing tonight.
And they've been. They have, you know. they have leveraged Instagram to the hilt. Like,
oh, really?
Yes.
That didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, no, they're all over it. I mean, obviously, sure, it's their more tame material.
Right,
but, you know,
yeah, sure.
But, you know, they definitely kind of engage people on a more personal level on Instagram and stuff like that to really draw people into their site, which is subscription-based.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of different people and a lot of different, I don't actually, not that many brands using it so far, but I think it's pretty interesting.
Hmm. Well, yeah. I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it tonight.
It's pretty cool. So this week, I have a bunch of different articles. The first one, this was a article from Search Engine Journal, called Link Building and Content Marketing, Two Different Peas in a Pod. And this was written by John Ball for Search Engine Journal. And he had some pretty interesting points in this. His biggest kind of gripe that he was addressing was that it annoys him when people conflate link building and content marketing.
Right.
And I think, you know, in one of the previous episodes, we discussed, you know, link building and why it's important for search engine rankings and basically, you know, for sites to be ranked in the search engines, you do have to have a certain amount of link equity and links pointing back at your site. And content marketing, some people say, well, we build this content and then it's automatically going to get links, or they just directly conflate link building and content marketing and saying somehow that content marketing equals links. And that really couldn't be, you know, further from the truth. When you do, they're entirely two different things. I mean, back in the day when people would do link building, they would do, you know, pretty much any type of sketchy activity, whether it be, blog spam, to just doing web 2.0 profile links, meaning that you just set up a bunch of different, like, WordPress and Typepad profiles and pages and then just point links back at your money site. And link building has definitely evolved a ton as time has gone on. One of the last big kind of wave of link building was all around guest blogging, and that has, you know, taken a serious hit because Matt Cutts, the head of web spam from Google, has consistently come out recently saying that, you know, guest blogging has really kind of backfired. There's a lot of just shitty guest blogging going on. The quality just really isn't good, and people are guest blogging on sites that are completely irrelevant to the sites that they're pointing links back at.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, just to clarify what I mean by guest blogging, I mean, you do outreach to a website, you contact a blogger or any type of site owner, and you say, we have this really cool piece of content, if you'll let us post it on your site and point a link back to our site, then you get free content. And, you know, basically, you're trading content for a link. If your sites and your audiences are very similar, that makes perfect sense. Like, if you're a travel blog and you have another friend that runs a travel blog, and you say, hey, let me do a guest post on your blog, and, you know, I can kind of introduce your audience to my style of writing, and maybe, you know, we'll share some of the a similar audience, and that audience can get to know both of our blogs, and, you know, it'll be a win-win.
Sure.
In that type of situation. But what happened was is that people basically, they set up blogs, they had them running for a while, and then they opened it up to, yes, they will accept guest blogs from people, but then it was like a pay-to-play type of situation where, you know, you would actually, it would be more of an advertisement. People weren't disclosing that they were getting paid to publish a blog post by someone else. There's been a lot of stuff like that. I mean, there's been a lot of major sites like Huffington Post and that have published blogs by people where it's not exactly on the up and up, where it's they're actually, you know, people are paying reporters to write stories, you know, just for the link equity and also, you know, for the publicity. And there's been some pretty major sites involved with scandals like that. And so the people at Google came out and said, you know, guest blogging, you know, in very rarely does it make sense, and because it's just gone completely out of control. And I thought that it was funny that John Ball doesn't really reference guest blogging in this article, but this article is a guest blog. It's a guest post. The author runs and owns a link building company.
Huh.
And
really?
Yeah. So, and he wrote this article for Search Engine Journal, and, you know, he kind of, I don't know if he links directly to his site, so maybe he's not doing it for the link, but, like,
right.
If you're like, oh, he owns a link building company, you can
right.
easily find out who that is if
right.
you just Google John Ball link building
right.
and find out what company that is. And I think that he mentions the name of the company in there somewhere.
I would think.
Yeah.
I don't remember either.
He did have some. I thought he had. Other than that, though, I mean, other than just, you know, making the point that link building and content marketing aren't the same things, and if you're doing content marketing and you're really, you know, building good content for your users, you shouldn't be, you know, completely. Your main goal should not be to, you know, get links from that content. You know,
right.
if you're doing that, then you're doing it wrong, is basically
right.
what he says. But he did mention two of the main ways that you can build links with content. And, you know, this is something that has been brought up in a lot of different articles, but it's worth mentioning because it's just one of those kind of basic things that, you know, you need to hear over and over again so that you remember to do it every time you actually build content. And the first one was called fresh mention link building, which is a great technique that if you write an article, and then, you know, you've made the headline catchy, you've made it really useful to your core audience, you know, and, you know, it's really, you've built it to be a resource, and then you go on LinkedIn, and you go on Facebook, and you go on Twitter, and you promote, you know, you promote the hell out of it, you really try and get people to drive traffic to it with on social and everything, and then you set up a Google alert for the name of the article, or, you know, maybe a snippet of text from the article, and you wait to see if you get any Google alerts of anybody talking about that article, talking about the content that you've written and shared. And if they do talk about it, but they don't link to it, you wait for the Google alert, and then you approach the webmaster or the blogger, whoever it is, and you say, hey, I noticed that you mentioned my article, that's really cool. Can you throw in a link to your in the article that you wrote
right.
so that people can find it more easily?
Yeah.
Which totally makes sense, right?
Absolutely.
But it's, and sometimes people don't do it. Some people, they might source your article. They might say, hey, this is from over here, but they might not put a link in, especially if they're not in the search engine marketing industry. They might just be something they don't think to do. But if you ask them to do it and you ask nicely, then there's, you know, a strong likelihood that they'll go ahead and throw a link in there for you. And the other one is something that definitely goes a long way, and that's just basically getting buy-in from influencers and thought leaders in your industry that, you know, you mention in your content. It's basically like building links through flattering people. You mention them maybe in the content themselves. You say, you know, so-and-so, you know, you cite them as a source. You say that, you know, they did this study, or they wrote this article, or, you know, they gave this presentation, and you use them as a source for your content, and you talk about, you know, how awesome they were and what you learned from them. And then after you publish the content, you go to onto Twitter, or you go, or you send them an email through email outreach,
and you hope that they then link to this.
Yes, right. Exactly, and that actually works really well, because who doesn't, if you're being talked about online in like a really good light, you probably want to share that with people, mm-hmm. and be like, look at me, you know, mm-hmm. people love me and they're talking about me. So that is, that can be a really effective way to get people to link to you. I think a lot of times it's, unfortunately, you'll depending on the person, but a lot of times people, when you do that, they'll retweet you, or, you know, they might share the post on Facebook or something, but they not
which
all...
Which isn't really what you're going for.
No, not really.
They know what you're doing
yeah.
at this point.
Well...
So they may or may not be interested in actually giving you the full Monty, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and especially people that are in the search marketing industry. I think that people in search marketing are probably some of the hardest people to get links
from.
Well,
yeah, I would imagine they would be. Yeah,
because
they know exactly what you're up to.
Yeah, and they don't trust your motives.
Right, and nor should they.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely thought the funniest thing about that article is that he doesn't mention guest blogging at all. I feel like that the article was done, you know, to... more than anything to bring attention to his own brand and his
yeah.
company. But he talks about, you know, using your, don't use all of your content on your own site. Use your content on other people's sites too. And he never calls it guest blogging, but he talks about using your content on other people's
which
sites.
Which is exactly what he's doing.
Which is exactly what he's doing with this article.
Right.
Which I doubt, and be, you know, was I'm sure that wasn't lost on the majority of the audience.
It was lost on me, but again, I'm a layman.
Yeah.
So you knew what was going on immediately, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people that read Search Engine Journal were pretty well aware of what he was doing. So. A couple of the other pieces that we looked at this week had a lot to do with video, and one of the posts was from Real SEO, and they've actually been doing it's a blog, it's REEL SEO, and they've been pretty much just doing articles on video SEO for a long time. I think they've been around for at least 5 years. And this article, they took a study from Pew Research Center and pretty much did some analysis of the different statistics that Pew came out with as far as who is watching news video online.
Yeah. Yep, this was pretty interesting. Not surprising to me.
And I actually, and that's one of the main reasons I this article stuck out to me was that I have always wondered about this because I think I've mentioned this before, you know, I cut the cord on cable like over a decade ago and pretty much, you know, have been consuming all of my media online.
Right.
And I had to assume that was what was going on with a lot of other people, but, you know, I'd never seen the statistics to back it up. And and the headline of this article is 49% of 30 to 49-year-olds watch online news video. And, you know, I think I would like to see some more in-depth numbers on that. I mean, you know, are we talking about them just watching video?
It's pretty ambiguous, it seems to me. I was thinking the same thing. Like, watch news video. Okay. First of all, what do we mean by watch?
Yeah.
And what do we mean by news? I couldn't really get a handle on what the definitions were there. Like, watch ever?
Yeah.
Watch every day? Watch multiple clips or different... from different sources, and what are we calling news? Is just any video on BuzzFeed or HuffPost? Are we calling that?
I hope not. Nudes. But probably, yeah.
It wasn't clear to me.
Well, the article kind of goes on to talk about user-generated video, which I didn't really understand the segue that they made into user-generated video. I felt like they were kind of just throwing that in there because they thought it was interesting rather than it was something that was really reflected in the statistics from Pew. Yeah, so I'm not sure what metrics they use to really kind of to determine, you know, what constitutes watching online news video. Because if that just means, you know, a video that someone shares from HuffPo on your Facebook feed and maybe you watch the first 5 seconds of it,
right?
That doesn't really, you know, that's really not too meaningful.
I mean, a lot of times, I don't mean to watch a video. I think it's an article I'm going to be able to, like, did you see the Onion story the other week? It was the headline was Christ article a video.
No.
And it was a video. And it was like, you know, hundreds of Americans confirm that, God damn it, the article is a fucking video. They looked, quickly scanned the page for somewhere to just read a synopsis of the article to no avail. So, you know, I open things, I think I'm just going to skim this article and get on with my day. And then this video thing pops up, and then, I don't want to see this video.
So
they might be counting that too.
I've noticed that what a lot of people are doing in the headline, they'll put like video in brackets.
If they have any sense of decency, if they have any form of compassion for humanity, there should be a little icon, a little brex, something to let you know that this is a video. And if you're just looking to skim a quick article, go elsewhere.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, something I've used in the past is just at the end of the headline, in brackets, put video or white paper or whatever. So just so that people know is that when you land here, there's going to be another step to really get to the meat of this. You know, there might be an abstract that kind of summarizes the white paper or summarizes the video, but if you really want to like get at the heart of the content, you're going to have to watch a video, or you're going to have to download a white paper or something like that.
A commercial for hotel.com or whatever.
Yeah, totally. And so the some of the statistics were pretty interesting. So out of 18 to 29 year olds, 48% of people watch online video news. 49% of 30 to 49 year olds. Once you go over that age bracket for 50 to 64 year olds, it drops considerably to 27%, and then 65 plus, it drops down to 11%.
Wow.
But then the numbers were actually, they went up with income as well. At $30,000 or less annually, you were at about 25%. And once you jumped up to $75,000 or more annually, you jumped up past 57%. Which I thought was pretty interesting, but I also think that a lot of people, as income goes up, generally people, and maybe I'm just generalizing, but I feel that some of those people are spending a lot more time in front of a computer all day.
Sure, that would make sense.
Yeah, and again, it jumped up with education. High school grads, 22%, college or graduate degree, all the way up to 52%. And I think that some of the most interesting things that are going to happen with I saw another statistic, and I cannot remember where I saw it, but it was something about like 2000, and by 2018, like, you know, more than half of the content consumed online will be video. And I'm not sure how they came to that conclusion, but, you know, I can definitely see it going up exponentially as the years go on and more video content being produced. I mean, the barrier to entry just keeps getting lower and lower. I mean, with the DSLR cameras the way they are these days, you can make pretty high quality video on, you know, on a $500 camera.
Right.
If you have the, you know, good lighting and good lenses and stuff like that. But I think the thing that's most interesting to me is, you know, and this will, you know, kind of tip my hat to where my you know, show my hand to where my politics are, but I've watched, you know, streaming video on MSNBC.com for years and years and years. And one of the things that's always annoyed me is the people that advertise on that website, and it's always multinational corporations. So you'd be watching the coverage of the BP oil spill on, you know, say a Rachel Maddow show or something like that, and then it would stop for commercials, and the only commercials you'd see were commercials by BP just trying clean up their image.
Right.
And it would be the same commercial over and over and over and over again. Or it would be, or the other company that you if you watch MSNBC and streaming ads, you'll see GE, the parent company of NBC Universal, just running these ads like over and over and over again. And so not only you, I think they're counter-effective, because you, when you have to see somebody's commercial every single commercial, it kind of just angers you at that brand. And I understand why they do it. I think a lot of it has to do, right now I think the issue is with people that are advertising on online video, is that it's all the major companies that already have this sunk cost in video production.
Mm-hmm.
They already have these huge budgets for TV advertising, for TV ads. So they take these, you know, these massive TV budgets that they have for advertising, and then they just take those same videos that they've already made in a lot of cases, and they re-edit them and kind of repurpose them for online use. And it's really, it's not, you know, they're not having to spend more money out of their pocket, because they're already making those videos for TV.
Right, that makes sense.
And I think what will be interesting is when a lot of companies that, you know, don't already have that sunk cost in video production are, you know, kind of get into the video game, as, you know, as things like Hulu and, you know, I don't know if Netflix will ever, you know, switch to some sort of advertising model, but if they did, and as the use of online video becomes, you know, more and more used, and you can do better targeting with video advertising, I think that you'll see a lot more investment, and not even heavy investment, but maybe just bootstrapping, just to kind of, you know, taking a DSLR and the talent that you have in house, and just making some creative video ads. I think that you'll start to see a lot better and more interesting advertising on online video as it, you know, gets more and more ubiquitous. The other thing is too, to go back to companies that have the sunk costs and just, you know, keep showing their videos over and over again. Do you watch much Hulu?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So if you watch Hulu, you have probably seen Samuel L. Jackson's Capital One ads like millions of times at this point. Yeah. It must be damaging to his personal brand to be so associated with Capital One. I mean, you don't feel this way because you don't watch Hulu and haven't seen him on there over and over again.
But, I don't think it's hurting his personal brand.
You don't?
No.
See, I always question stuff about that, is because people, like, when you, in this country, you don't see Brad Pitt.
Well, all the foreign stuff that these guys do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Foreign markets. All the foreign market commercials that we never see.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because Brad Pitt and, you know, Harrison Ford, all of them, you know, they are taking huge dollar contracts from Japanese brands and companies to plaster their face all over billboards and all over the sides of buses all over Asia. And I don't think that a lot of Americans really, really realize that.
Right.
And they refuse to sign those types of endorsement deals in this country because it kind of, and rightfully so, I think to some extent, maybe it's becoming less the case, but I think it kind of takes away from the movie star mystique if you're seeing them hawking some sort
so
of good.
So why? Oh, here's my question then. Why does it? Their movies are showing there too. Why does it take away from their mystique here, but doesn't take away from their mystique in Japan?
Well,
I mean, people work. People, you know, are trying to, you know, make money. I mean, the whole world is trying to become, everybody on Earth is trying to become a reality television star. People endorse things, athletes endorse things. Like, I don't understand why that's something that they're so careful about not doing in the United States, but they're doing it everywhere else.
I think that one of the main reasons is because that if a movie or a musician or you know becomes successful, becomes a big hit in the US, then it almost automatically becomes a big hit in the rest of the world. You know, they see that success and they
right.
and everything, whereas but I feel like it has to else and you
it's
know,
gotta be successful here first.
Yeah,
and therefore you don't want to, you know, poison the well.
Yeah.
Or make people sick of you or think of you as the Capital One guy.
Yeah.
Instead of the action star or the whatever it is.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Also, like, you're Samuel L. Jackson. Like, why are you taking money from credit card companies?
I mean, Samuel L. Jackson, I feel like, hasn't been cool in a while.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I think his cred, I don't think he's got a whole lot of street cred left to worry about. You know what I mean? It's like Ice Cube on the... on the Coors Light commercials, you know? It's over. He doesn't care.
Does he do Coors Light commercials?
Oh, God,
now?
You've never seen those?
No.
Oh God,
like I said, I don't have cable,
he
so
does,
I don't.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does a lot of them. They're bad. Really bad. But what does he care? He's you know, he's not trying to fool anyone anymore to thinking that he's a drug dealer or anything.
So, the next article that we looked at this week was why content alone isn't content marketing, and it was by Joe Chernov over at the HubSpot Inbound blog. And I thought this one had some really salient points, and I'm going to read my favorite the quote from it that really stuck with me. And the quote is, "My theory is that content marketing is being run outside of the core demand generation team. So we're seeing PR, social, and corporate marketing take ownership of the role, and those groups aren't historically the most data-centric marketing functions. Over time, this could be a real threat to the trade. The greater the distance between content marketing and demand generation, the more difficult it becomes to prove business value. There's a word for marketing trends that never establish a business value. Fad." And I thought that was a really, really good point. You'll see content marketing kind of get rolled together with social and get kind of, you know, people not knowing where, you know, who should take the reins on these initiatives, not knowing that content marketing is something extremely specific that has to, you know, there has to be a strategy behind every piece of content that you put out, as far as what is the point of this, you know, what are the keywords that we're using, what is the persona that we're speaking to, where are they in the customer journey cycle. You know, how are we going to promote this, whether it be, you know, through content amplification or social or leveraging our own employees to share it on LinkedIn. I mean, all of this has to really been taken into consideration. And when it gets passed off to kind of this, maybe the same team that is doing corporate communications, and that might be, and I, you know, you sometimes you'll see it with people, you know, running Twitter feeds, but, and then, you know, it being kind of passed on to content marketing being passed on to the people that are doing communications, and it not falling to a similar marketing channel team, whereas direct mail or pay-per-click advertising, things that are historically very, very metric-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you run a direct mail campaign, you're going to know exactly how much money you spent on mailers. You're going to know what messaging you used on that direct mail piece.
Right.
And you're going to, you know, so you're going to know your investment, and you're going to, you know, typically you're going to, you know, have a separate phone number for people to call, or if they respond to the direct mail by mailing something in, you're going to be able to track exactly how much business it generated. And the same with PPC. It's very, very straightforward. Just the by its nature, PPC is you spend a certain amount of money on advertising, and you know exactly how many clicks that you got, and you know exactly how many of those clicks converted into sales. And so by that way, it's extremely metric driven. If there's not a positive ROI, we either need to change the messaging on our advertising or our tactics, or, you know, we need to spend the money elsewhere if it's not a good fit for our industry.
Right.
And with content marketing, it's just like, well, we're just going to have somebody write a blog every week, and, you know, that's content marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And No, it's not. That's just blogging once a week. And right. You know, hoping that maybe, you know, it will, you know, drum up some business and you know, somehow that will convert into leads. And that's definitely not the case. And I thought, you know, he had a funny point in the article, Joe Chernoff, the author of the article, where he said, you know, what is HubSpot, you know, going to pull out of its hat next? And he said, you know, said leads. And because that's the point of content marketing, is to ultimately drive leads into your, you know, into your sales team, you know, and basically feed the sales funnel and keep things moving. And did you take anything away from that article other than
No. I don't remember. I read it for sure. I read all the articles for this week. But I think, you know, sometimes it gets a little bit too deep into the field for me to process.
No, some of it, you know, to use your favorite metaphor, some of it's going to be inside baseball.
Exactly.
And,
so I can, you know, some of them I get and some of them I don't get as much, or some of them I get the initial gist, but then gets down into the weeds and loses me.
Yeah, the main point of this one was just that, you know, this content marketing is something that really needs to be taken seriously and kind of, you know, looked at almost scientifically, just the way the rest of your demand generation channels are looked at. Right.
Data-driven.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that. See, I understand that.
Well, Trent, I think we have...
cover them all?
Yes, we have.
Wow,
yeah.
Not bad.
And, there was some good stuff. There was actually a couple other articles. There was an interesting infographic and article over at the Visually blog, and there was a couple other pieces that I'm going to link to in the show notes.
Cool.
So everyone knows, the URL for the site is... contentmarketingbrief.com, and on the site you can find you can listen to the show on SoundCloud. You can also get links to the show on iTunes and on Stitcher.
Yeah, we're on iTunes.
We're on iTunes,
Stitcher,
and we're
that.
On Stitcher.
Great.
Contentmarketingbrief.com. The Twitter handle is @contentbrief. If you have any stories that you think are interesting or you'd like to hear us talk about, you can go ahead and tweet me. And yeah, check out the show, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, Dave.
Thanks, Trent.
Bye.
Bye. Someone's gonna tell you.